The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Well, former President of Ireland, Mary McAleese, is on the line. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well, thankfully. How are you?
I'm doing very good also. Yep. My granny used to say, taking no hurt.
Taken no hurt. Well, long may that continue. The business of social distancing, or rather physical distancing, I suppose, and the restrictions that we are all either living or working under, how do you think it's going to be handled by us, number one, and how do you think that it might change us, number two?
Well, I think what's interesting is the speed with which we have adapted to the new regime. A lot of this stuff is completely countercultural for us. We are, you know, we're handshaking, huggy-wuggy people. We're social people. In a queue in a supermarket, we like to stand and chat. If we meet people on the street, we love to stand and chat in groups. We're head-to-head people. So what I'm really impressed by is the speed with which we have embraced the new regime, because we understand the why of it. We know that it's for our good and the good of the entire country. And it's the capacity to change quickly, which is really and to just accept the change. I mean, it's again another phrase of my granny's comes to mind. We don't have to like it; we just have to do it. And I think that's what we're doing. We've decided we have to do it. It has to be done, and we're doing it. And the speed with which we have done that, I think, is a testimony to the sense of community and decency that's out there.
Do you think it's going to change people? I mean, we had a huge period of materialism running up to the crash, the Great Recession that we had starting in 2008. And we thought, OK, we've learnt our lessons. Consumerism is not particularly the way we should be going. But after a few short years, we were back, the economy roaring forward again. And we kind of forgot how tough it was for some people, and still is for some people, on foot of that recession.
That I don't know. I think it's very hard to project forward. It's very hard to project forward almost a week at a time at the moment, and never to mind way beyond what would happen after we get beyond this. I've been reading poems from the famine times, where people thought that, you know, life would be that a whole new value system would take over. I'm just not sure. Tell you what, at the moment, people like me, I think, are relishing being in their own homes, funnily enough, for a while. We have very busy lives, and we probably don't spend enough time at home. Everything we do is kind of rushed, and you're rushing here and there. And to some extent, I'm enjoying not having to do that, and to have, in a sense, the luxury of sitting at home, conscious, of course, of the fact that there are plenty of people who would prefer not to be, who prefer their jobs and to be out there and to be earning the money and not have the money worries that many people have. But that said, maybe beyond this, the ways that we find of connecting to each other will definitely change. I mean, I think of people of my mother's generation, including my mother, who have now become, for the first time in their lives, proficient at using FaceTime, WhatsApp, iPad. So they've moved into the era of technology seamlessly, having resisted it, you know, right into almost, you know, to the late 80s, to their late 80s. And I think that's been a fantastic change. The idea of working from home, a lot more people working from home. After this is all over, I suppose, people will run tests to see how effective that has been. Could more people do it? Could you give more flexibility to people in the workplace that they mightn't have to come into work every day? That might, you know, take care of some of our childcare issues. Who knows? I think there will be things that we will measure after this. But for the moment, I think what we're doing is just getting through it, and getting through it's very important. One of the things that should be, strictly speaking, in Scotland at the moment. I'm supposed to be there right through until next week teaching, but I came home the week before St. Patrick's, because I had been listening to, you know, the voices of Tony Holohan, of, you know, of our Taoiseach Leo, and of the two Simons, Simon Coveney, Simon Harris, and then people like Paddy Mallon and Sam McConkie, people that I know who I have fantastic respect for. And they were just so clear-sighted about what needed to be done. And I thought, well, I'm going to come home. And I arranged then with my students that we would just do the stuff online, which is what we're doing at the moment. And it's been interesting to me, again, coming back to Ireland, just how very fortunate we are to have a team at the top that is just so credible and so clear-sighted. People like Paul Reed speaking to us, Tony Holohan. There was a lovely poem, I don't know if you saw it, in last week's Sunday Business Post by Chris Fitzpatrick, the consultant from the Coombe. Brilliant poem, actually, just summarising where we're at the moment. And he just puts it very simply, stay at home, full stop. But he has a lovely expression about Tony Holohan. He says, he's our Sully. He has worked it out where the Hudson is. And that's a reference back to, of course, you know, Chesley Sullenberger, the guy who, the captain of the airline who landed it on the Hudson. And that brought back to my mind, because he's one of my great heroes, it brought back to my mind an interview that was done with Chesley Sullenberger after that event. He was asked, did he pray when the emergency happened? And he said, no, I didn't. I didn't have time to pray. I was hoping the people down the back did that. And so in a way, we're all the people down the back. And we have all these frontline workers, and there are many of them. They're working in hospitals, they're working in supermarkets, they're delivering goods, they're looking after kids for our frontline workers. And we have a lot of frontline workers who just don't have time. You know, they haven't time to pray. They have hardly time to wash their faces. They're all washing their hands, but they have hardly time to wash their faces. They're so busy. And what can we do? You know, sitting in our homes, which is all we're asked to do. We're only asked to stay home. And we have plenty of food. The chain of supply has been kept going. You know, again, frontline people are keeping that going. So what can we do? We can, if we can pray, we can pray for them. But one of the prayers we can offer for them is just by doing what they are asking us to do. Stay home, wash the hands, maintain the social distancing. It's, you know what? It's not a lot to ask of us in a way, to save our country and to save our people. And that I think is what we're asked for. And there's a lovely phrase at the end of that poem. I just think it's wonderful. At the end of it, he says, I think of Heaney. Believe a further shore is reachable. And then he says, it is. So that's up to us to reach that further shore. We're all in this boat. We've got to pull together.
In terms of the kind of set pieces that many people are missing, for example, Sunday Mass. And we know that it's more characterized by older people, I suppose, than younger people. They can't do that anymore. Some of them may or may not have streaming services available to them. What impact do you think it will have on religious observance? Will people be just delighted to get back to a crowded church after all of this? Or could it lead to further decline in church attendance?
Well, crowded churches have not really been, in fact, it's the opposite has been the phenomenon in recent times. And older people like my mother's generation, have already got accustomed, I think, to watching their Mass or listening to it on the radio on a Sunday or watching it on television on a Sunday over some time now. Long before this happened, people who were housebound already did that. I don't know. I personally have not found watching those the Mass with the lonely priest at the altar in the empty church, I'd actually find them quite depressing. And so instead, I reach for music. And sacred music, good music. There's a wonderful album that I have practically worn a hole in now by a good old Dubliner called John McNally. I don't know if you remember John McNally. He's a wonderful, wonderful tenor. Mm-hmm. Has been living for donkey's years in Australia. And he has a great album called Sings, Sings My Soul? Then Sings My Soul. And so I've been playing that off, you know, on a Sunday morning, that's what I play. And that lifts my heart and lifts my spirit. I find the lonely, even the Pope standing on his own in the square in St. Peter's, I just find that so both distressing and depressing, thinking of what's going on in Italy, that I couldn't bear it. I want something.
But a powerful image nonetheless.
And we're so fortunate. I mean, there is wonderful, wonderful music out there, and there's wonderful comedy as well going, doing the rounds. It's one of the things that we're, you know, among our friends, we're all passing around these, you know, little comedy pieces and funny cartoons, and we're on the, I've never had as much contact with friends and family on, you know, doing quizzes and every day on WhatsApp and on FaceTime. And all of that, I think, has, you know, has helped fill the time. Will that maintain after, you know, after this is all over, or will we just go back to the, you know, the once a month contact? I don't know. Who knows?
Now, your own memoir, Here's the Story, that was set to be published later this year. Is that going to go ahead on time?
Let's hope so, because I'm working on the editing of it at the moment. That's one of the things keeping me busy at the minute, yes. Yeah, let's hope so. Well, I've plenty to be done. You know, I'm very lucky that way too. Martin, he has the garden. I have my bits and pieces of writing and essay marking and what have you. And keeping in contact with the kids and the grandkids particularly. Like a lot of people, we miss our grandchildren. Not 100% certain that they really miss us, because I know that when we phone up, the idea that they have to drag themselves away from their iPads to actually say hello to their granny and granda, you know, it looks like a form of torture. At least that's the look that I see on their faces. Like, do we have to? So, but we miss them. And a lot of grandparents do miss their grandkids and the connection with them. Ours are very small, so they're very small yet. They probably haven't learned the etiquette of at least pretending to want to talk to us. So
I suppose finally,
that,
you know,
everybody in the country has something, you know, something.
We talk
some
about
part of their lives has changed.
We talk about our own reaction and how generous Irish people are, and people looking after neighbours, and those who are cocooned will not be short of supplies, and that's great. And Post doing a fantastic job. But I must say, I was also reassured. We often think of you know, the others out there, the Italians, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the, you know, all of these nations, and the sense of a common humanity, you know, all the songs from balconies and the caring that is expressed very publicly by these people, it is actually reassuring about the bulk of humanity.
I think this is one of the things that has been probably the most uplifting part of the story. This is a great test of people. To test of what's deep inside them and what they're capable of producing when, really, when the chips are down and they have to. And they have done. I mean, here in Ireland, the response has been phenomenal. The goodness, the kindness, the decency, the looking out for people, that whole culture of care that we know is there all the time, but then has to ratchet up at a time like this, it has been phenomenal. We look at how the GAA responded, how UNPOST has responded, how many voluntary organisations around the country. And then they're being asked to adapt almost on a daily basis. Organisations that were, you know, preparing food hampers, that now having to change the way in which they deliver them because of the more recent changes to how we have to, you know, we're expected to live and perform. So the getting on with it, the just doing it thing, I think has been phenomenal here. People seeing what has to be done, and getting stuck in and doing it. And doing it because they know it's the right thing to do. Also, I think, because people want to do it. You know, there's a lovely feeling out there that people want to be able to volunteer. Those who are free to volunteer their services, whether it is from home or whether it is whatever way in which they can show their kindness to others. People have been looking for all sorts of inventive ways to do that. We think of all the entertainers who are doing the free shows online. All of that, trying to tell us in, you know, a million ways that we're not islands, that we do have a sense of connectedness to one another, and we do care about one another. Coming out to doors to applaud the healthcare workers who are right on the front line and who, you know, who are taking a mighty hit. And a mighty risk every day they go into work. All of that tells us that we are society, we are community. There is such a wonderful thing as community. The evidence is in, and that also is very reassuring, because honestly, we won't get through this. We won't find the Hudson, to quote Chris Fitzpatrick, without community.
All right. Mary, look, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning. And on behalf of the listeners and myself and my gang, that really want to pass on our best to yourself and Martin and your extended family. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, and to all your listeners this morning, just stay safe, stay well, and stay home.